Despite its best efforts, we made it out of the Thruxton car park and we're here today to bring you all the Thruxton reaction.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. You join us once again and we're going to take you through all the action from Sunday at Thruxton. And we're a little bit crispy from it, aren't we?
Yes, I'm burnt on a very particular part of my neck, which is always good fun, hence the polo. But yes, we have now completed all 10 British Touring Car tracks. How did you find Thruxton? If you tell me by going down the motorway heading towards Andover, I'm going to thump you. But how did you find the experience of Thruxton on Sunday? What are your thoughts on that before we go into the
action? To me, it felt quite a bit different to a lot of the other circuits. And I don't know whether that's because a lot of the viewing areas are very, or feel a lot more cramped because they're all squished in together, basically. Even when we went up to Knock Hill, it felt like we had a little bit more room because you had the infield of the circuit, which you could get to and view from. And to be fair, some of the racing was a little bit boring.
Agreed. Across all series, agreed.
There weren't too many instances, and any instances that did happen seemed to be in the F4 and seemed to be when we were wandering around doing other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Let us know down in the comments if you feel strongly against that. Obviously, Touring Car Race 3 was a Touring Car Race 3, and we got our action in the end, but we had to wait for it all day.
Yeah, I mean, there were some positives. I did think that there was a great deal more to do in the trade area, which we haven't seen. Definitely. I certainly think it completely outperformed what you get at a standard MSV track we've been to. I don't know if that's down to cost to be there or just size of area, etc. But it also felt quite nice to have it all in one place. I know that we go to Donington or Silverstone, that it's all kind of spread out around the track and it can be a bit of a pain if you want to go to the Napa or Virtue Fan Zone, which is down one end, and then the rest of the trade stuff's down the other. That is a bit annoying, so it was nice to have it all together. It was interesting to see that none of the cars could fit into the garages. I wasn't aware of that.
On TV, you think they just push them out of the garages, but there is really not a lot of room in there, and there is only room for the team members to stand in while the race is going on. All the cars are out the back in their own awning, like we would normally see the Porsches at every single event.
Yeah, so that was an interesting thing to see. On the negative side of things, in my view, there wasn't enough facilities such as toilets. I think MSV get that fantastically right.
Accessibility was a trouble.
Yeah, it was. Well. And the car park getting out, that was the worst car park experience I've ever had. It was appalling.
The other thing about accessibility, and I don't know whether you considered this, is where we were walking up on the bank to the first complex, which is where we sat for all of the races for the touring cars. That bank was quite steeply tilted.
Yes.
And if you have a wheelchair to try and
or
get
push
along
chair,
there,
to be fair,
or pushchair, we saw people struggling even with the trolleys that they drag along. It's difficult. So I think hopefully we know and we understand that Thruxton has changed hands in very recently, and hopefully improvements are going to be made to try and combat some of that, because I think it has the potential to be a decent venue.
I agree. There were some definite positives there, say, but for me, the biggest shadow on the weekend for me was just the farce and getting out. It was appalling. And what annoyed me the most on that, and this is not the Thruxton car park review, don't worry, was that unlike most events, there are actually marshals there to try and help. I don't mean race marshals, I'm talking event marshals to try and get people out of the car park, who by and large were doing absolutely nothing apart from one or two who actually seemed to try and grasp the situation by the scruff of the neck and try to sort stuff out. We didn't move for 45 minutes. It was just ridiculous.
Yes.
Other than
racing,
that,
anyway.
Yeah, we'll move on to the racing itself. What's more exciting, the car park or the race one and two?
Well, we'll get into race one first of all. As we normally do, we'll bring you all three races and then we'll get on to our predictions, bit of championship order and our awards for the weekend. Before race one even started, Sheddon got a penalty from the race to pole event on Saturday. Obviously, we had a safety car during that, and Sheddon was then caught weaving once the safety car lights had gone out, therefore meaning that he got a penalty post-race, basically, to put him back slightly on the grid for the start of race one.
Yes, as part of the new safety car restart procedure, once the lights go out, you cannot move. You can no longer weave across the track. You must maintain a normal course, effectively.
It's a NASCAR style sort of restart.
Yes.
Apart from that, it was a very even start for all cars. And by the end of the first lap, Cook had a fairly solid lead. Obviously, having taken the race to pole victory, he we know how confident and how quick he can be around Thruxton.
We'll find out in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I know. And it seems like he felt really at home, especially with the engine setup that Toyota's got this season. And once he got into the lead, he didn't feel too challenged in that first race, did he?
Don't think he was challenged at all, to be honest with you. But you say he got a good start, checked out, survived the first few corners, and that was that.
One driver that didn't survive the first lap particularly well was a certain Mr. Ingram. He got shuffled out early on, was down to ninth by the end of the first lap. When we saw it in the first instance, we thought he should have let it go a bit sooner and tucked back in. But seeing the replays today, I don't think he really had that option.
No, he gets sort of ran wide by Camish. Yes. Camish has the line, to be fair, but you're right. There's not a natural chance for Ingram to come out of it and duck back in, which means he gets run out onto the grass, which checks up his momentum, and he has to slow off to get back on the circuit and drop down to as far as 10th, was it?
Ninth in total by the end of the first lap. And then he started to make his way back through. Obviously, had a reduced amount of boost being so high up in the championship, so had to use it where he felt the most effect of it, basically. But the race settled down very quickly after that. Not too much else happened. Sheddon had an issue on lap 8, had to come into the pits. Load of grass caught up in the radiator. We didn't actually see a replay as to where he had gone off. I'm going to assume out the back of the circuit.
But on his own accord.
Yeah, completely of his own accord. Grass in the radiator. Temperatures went through the roof. Had to get in, get that all cleared out, and then back out at the back of the grid. Apart from that, Cook, Sutton, Robotham was up to third by this point. They were all sort of like easing away at the front. 7/10 of a second between all of them. Fairly comfortable.
Yeah.
Ingram was then having to do his bounce back. He managed to get past Dorling, Doble, and then a very nice move around the outside of Morgan coming into the final chicane.
Yeah, that was good.
A bit of a Dan Dare move around the outside, late on the brakes, but completed it with ease. No need to cut the chicane or anything like that.
Morgan to give him racing room, which was nice, and he didn't ease off the brake to run him wide. It was good racing all round.
Yeah, and then Camish was his next target. And I must say, we both said this at the time, his defence against Ingram this year, last year, possibly even the year before, has always been really quite weak.
He's not going to make it into Andy Burnham's new cabinet as Minister of Defence, is he? I was aghast, to be honest with you. I couldn't believe how easy it was for him to get past.
It looked as if, and this is the only sort of like leeway I'm going to give him, once he got past and then Morgan was on the back of him, Camish looked slow in the second half of the race for me.
He did, I agree with you. And I'm not suggesting that the course of action should be to punt Ingram off, but what I'm saying is that I know that Proctor...
Make it difficult.
We've seen Proctor defend those things harder. Yeah. We've seen Turkson defend those things harder. And we've seen... Chilton defend those things harder, I would suggest. It looked almost as if a little sort of white flag from the window come by. It was a bit... And as you say, it's not the first time we've seen it either.
Camish and Morgan then had a battle for a lap or two, swapping places with, I think, Morgan coming out on top eventually. In the end. What there was a nice battle pack in the midfield. Drivers chopping, changing positions every few laps. Every time they came back to around where we were viewing from, there was a different order of about 6 or 7 cars. But they were on the edges of the top 10 and not really pushing for much, were they?
No, exactly that. And I think something that caught my eye this weekend was how big the field spread was as well, and how relatively quickly that field spread came into play.
Yeah, and even with that field spread, there were the three drivers at the back in Hamilton, Bensley and Gilbert, obviously there first. Proper weekends of racing. Yes, Bensley did a 3-round event last season, but they were all having their own little battle at the back, and there were three drivers still racing for something, even if it wasn't for points.
Yeah, in the end, 48.3 seconds split the field, which is a lot in touring cars.
It is. Collard managed to pick up a penalty during the race, 10-second penalty for track limits. This was later rescinded, I'm assuming, due to further evidence.
Yeah, so... The way the track limits work is you get a warning, you get a final warning, and then you get your 10 seconds. He was able to present evidence in the Toka bus that there was fluid on the track, which sent him wide for what he got his penalty for.
Yep.
Therefore, the penalty was revoked on the grounds that it was a slippery surface, avoiding action, et cetera, et cetera. So it was extenuating circumstances beyond pushing the limit of the car.
Yeah, Smiley also had a change at the end of the race. He was put back a position, I think, with Aaron Taylor-Smith. For apparently gaining an advantage, possibly cutting a corner through an overtake. Didn't see it on track. Didn't see a replay of it at all. No. So we're going to have to take that Bark's word for that.
Yeah, it was cutting the chicane, which I'm going to assume means the final chicane, given we were sat there. The other chicaning didn't happen there. Yep. So in terms of the race order, then Josh Cook takes his first outright victory of the season from Ashley Sutton from Dan Robottom, getting his first podium position for Plato Racing and their first podium. So congratulations to them. Senna Proctor marks a pretty good return with a fourth place finish ahead of Tom Ingram, Adam Morgan, Dan Camish, Mikey Doble, James Doyle and Aaron Taylor-Smith rounding out your top 10. With Smiley, De Leon, Chilton, Collard and Moffat taking the rest of the points paying positions. A difficult start to the day for BMW for sure, who were unable to bounce back from what was a disappointing qualifying and sprint to race pole event from Saturday.
Yeah, moving on to race two then, it was much of the same, dare I say. It was a little lackluster.
Yeah, so Moffat had an issue on the outlap. The car wasn't revving, broke down on the way to the grid, so he had to start from the back, so he had to give up his 10th place position from race one.
It was a sign of things to come for the rest of his day, unfortunately.
Yeah, it wasn't great for him. We then saw that Sutton's start was to be investigated after the race. We'll get out of the way here, and now no issue was found. I must admit, on the replays we saw, and we can only go on what the replays are, I didn't see the car move.
No, it is very minor, and they
if at all
alluded to in commentary that it was possibly when he went to set the clutch for the start procedure that the car jolted very slightly, but he certainly didn't creep forward.
Well, yeah, then if you think about yourselves at home with your own cars, when you as traffic lights get ready to go and you dip the clutch, you feel the back end of the car lift up as the you know, that could be perceived as it's a movement. Is it a movement forward, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, no evidence was found to suggest that Sutton had made a start line infringement. This is not a tinfoil hat conspiracy. I've seen a lot of people moaning about this because Ingram got a penalty, which will come to in race three.
Although, interestingly...
Is it?
Shall I mention it?
Go on.
Mr. Cole, who is normally the advisor for penalties across a weekend or instances across the weekend, was not there this weekend, possibly playing some music elsewhere as he normally does, but it was a certain Mr. Gow that was in there making the final decision, which doesn't sit quite comfortably.
No, I agree. It's no slight on Mr. Gow before anybody starts on that route. It's just a bit, to me, it's a bit strange to have the series lead taking charge of that. It'd be a little bit like having, I don't know, Infantino in charge of the FIFA, to be fair. I like a separation of, a degree of separation in these things. Just
an independent, an independent who has been in racing sort of like within the last 10 or 15 years as well.
Yeah, I would just prefer that little bit of separation.
Agreed.
But I will say that even though he was doing it this weekend, there's no suggestion or it's ridiculous to suggest. I would go as far as say it's ridiculous to suggest there's any sort of underhandedness here.
And I would suggest that all the penalties that have been given out this weekend are pretty accurate.
Agreed. I disagree with none. So, yeah. We then saw Sutton into an early lead, overtaking Cook at the back of the circuit. He just gets such a good run for those fast-flowing corners and can set it up.
Did it perfect. 2, 3, 4 times this weekend where he turns the car in so much tighter but carries so much more speed, which is completely backwards in my mind.
I completely agree, because it should be a case that the car either snaps out of the rear or he clips a curb or the dirt and sends him out the front. But talking of cars snapping out of the rear, Aidan Moffat exit stage left a very unhappy car on lap 3. The car just snapped on him coming out of the circuit. It wasn't a happy car, was it? There was clearly something wrong, some gremlins at play, which is a shame for him. Ingram was then able to get by Morgan at Noble with a good move again on Morgan. Better speed through the car. Yep. We then saw Proctor have an error where he managed to drop it out onto the grass coming out of the complex, which dropped him further down the grid. Helped a little bit by Doble,
very minor amount of contact, but for big consequences, unfortunately. Probably Proctor's only marring part of this weekend.
Yeah, and I suppose is it harsh caught an error? I don't know. There was no punishment for Doble, which is interesting. We then saw Ingram warned for track limits again, which I think means he's had a warning in all of the sessions to the point. I could be wrong, but he certainly had warnings in race one as well.
Surely, if you're Spencer, you're as soon as he gets that first warning, you go, what are you doing? Just stay away from... I understand you're needing to push and you're needing to find the limits and stuff like that, but just stay away. Be a little bit more cautious.
The thing is...
Otherwise, it's going to cost you.
The thing is, by all means, get the first warning.
Yeah.
fine.
Absolutely.
It's a free hit. It's a free hit. But then you cannot be putting yourself in a position where you're risking your second or your final warning, rather. And it's difficult to have sympathy for what happens later, given that he had warnings in all three races. And I believe he had a final warning in race three as well. We'll come to that in a moment. Dorlin then was able to get by Morgan after Morgan error. He just ran it wide in the back part of the circuit onto the grass. Dorlin slipped by with ease. So good reward for some pressure he'd been putting on Morgan throughout.
Dorlin had been looking really quite solid this weekend as well, carrying good speed and comfortably quicker than Smiley this weekend.
Yeah, by a country mile, completely agree. We then saw the positive side of Camish's racing, which is a good move on Rowbottom at the chicane. What he may lack for in defending, he is can make up for in attacking. And fair play to Rowbottom as well. There is obviously a little bit of history between these two, but
don't know what you're on about.
Gave Camish the space, and it was a good overtaking, good touring car racing all round. We then saw Cook and Ingram at the chicane, which is sort of the big talking point, if you will, from race two. So Ingram at this point had his final warning for track limits. And they came together, shall we say.
It was, again, similar to the move that he put on Morgan in race one, down the outside, late on the brakes. And I think Cook understood how late on the brakes he was and also left it that little bit later.
He gets a little bit of a slide as well, Cookie.
He gets a very unsettled car. And we said the car looked quite twitchy on Saturday for Cook as well. And that back end just kicks out and almost nudges Ingram, in my view, which then causes Ingram to divert, go back behind the bales through the final part of the complex or the chicane, and continue on down the road.
Yeah, he has to sort of snap the car back, which means by naturally snapping it, he has to go around the chicane and cut the chicane, which is a track limit violation.
It is.
Cook also had to cut the chicane as well, but on the other side.
I must say, I don't like track limit violations getting given for when there's contact involved.
I agree with you. I do agree with you. And I think to myself that if Connard has an extenuating circumstance for fluid,
exactly,
this is also an extenuating circumstance. The only thing I would say is that the clerk of the course could make the call that you've caused the contact here, Ingram, and therefore you are responsible. I'm not saying that's what I think, but what I'm saying is that
that's a big call. If, for any clerk of the course to go, you've caused that contact, where I think it was more Cook being unsettled and then into Ingram.
It's a racing
incident rather than Ingram unsettling Cook.
I think Ingram is there and has to sweep slightly across Cook as he's getting onto the apex. I think Cook is also wide and pushing back. In my view, it's a racing incident and there's nobody particularly to blame, which is the action the stewards took, because there was no penalty for this apart from the track limit.
Yeah, my only thing with that is the amount of time that Ingram gains by then going across the back of there. He doesn't slow down, or certainly doesn't show to slow down at all.
He doesn't.
He's been slowed down by the incident itself, but he fires out of there at full race pace.
Yeah, what he should then do is drop the gap back to Cook, so it was roughly what it was prior to the incident.
Yep.
Would he then have still got the penalty? Probably so. Although the track limits is you're gaining an advantage when you're leaving the track. Had he dropped it back, or even given the place back to Cook and been on the safe side, would he still have got the penalty? I don't know.
We've seen many times this weekend where, especially at the back of the circuit, if a driver runs wide coming out of church, which we know is a place being monitored this weekend, and you're running wide onto the grass, one, you still get the track limits, but two, you've been slowed down by running onto the grass.
However, the flip side of this argument is that whilst I agree with you, I don't necessarily like the idea of track limits for contact. It's hard to have a great deal of sympathy for Ingram, given that he was on a final warning.
Yes, yes.
And had been pushing track limits all weekend didn't need to be. And that's, I think, I think it is harsh that if you've been helped off the circuit, it's harsh you then get a track limit. I agree.
For me, I think that's why they're looking at track limits, going, right, you've got three strikes. If you do have contact like this, we can then count it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just pushing too hard or trying to gain that advantage, then, fair cop, you're caught.
Yeah, I think it is a little harsh, but on the flip side, you could quite rightly point the finger and say, well, don't be on a final warning by that point of the race, which is still fairly early in the race.
Midway through.
So, yeah. The incident itself, I'm saying, is a racing incident. Agreed. I don't think either is particularly to blame. I think it's just what happens. Unfortunately, that part of the circuit, as we'll get to in race three, is infamous for the pinch point. Yeah, it is the pinch point. I say it's difficult as well, because it is one of the only three places in the circuit you can naturally overtake.
Yes.
And therefore, you I think that drivers may feel they have to make a move into there because there's nowhere else to do it.
Let us know your thoughts down in the comments, whether you think that Cook was at fault, racing incident, Ingram at fault, whether you think the track limit penalties for cutting across in an incident like that one should count or should be just scrubbed off. Let us know.
Yep. We then saw Cook and Camish have a little scrap through the chicane. Cook did come out on top, but did cut the chicane in doing so, and would get a penalty for this later on, which would put him back behind Camish, which
was confirmed. That one was more fair play. It didn't look like he just cut across the inside to keep that position.
And should have given the place back. I completely agree. Then Sutton won. Simple as that. That's the end of that race. Sutton won. Obviously, start was investigated. No, nothing doing. Big dent in Ingram's title hopes.
Although the points gap where it was coming into this weekend to where it is now after this weekend, he just keeps extending. He's just nibbling away a few tens of points each weekend. He's just making it look quite easy.
So just for the record, the race two result, Ash Sutton won from Dan Camish in the end. Obviously, Cook on the road, Camish in the stewards bus. Josh Cook third. Dan Rowbottom, another good solid result for him in fourth. Ingram dropped to fifth after the penalty. James Dorlin finishing sixth, and another really strong showing for him. Adam Morgan seventh from Mikey Doble, Aaron Taylor-Smith and Gordon Sheddon rounding out the top 10, with Collard, Chilton, Rainford, De Leon and Proctor, who recovers after his incident, to round out your points paying positions.
Yeah, and then following Dan Camish's instructions, Sutton managed to pull out ball number six.
They've been heated, Sam. They've been heated.
So pulled out ball number six to put James Dorlin on pole position with, because of the penalty, Ingram alongside him. Now, Ingram would be carrying the boost from where he finished on the road, meaning that he had the second least amount of boost. It's all difficult, isn't it? Race three. Chaos. It's a typical race three.
It was. Yes, cars, it was.
Certainly for the opening five or six laps, and then they all did settle down once again. Ingram had a fairly even start with Dorlin, but in that second phase...
Well, you need to go back a bit, like he did.
Yes.
Because coming to the grid, see what I did there?
Yes.
Coming to the grid, he stops in his box, potentially a little bit over, and then reverses.
Now, from where I saw him stop, I think he probably would have been okay.
I agree with you.
And I think Spencer... We know race engineers now are on the pit wall, making sure that they're in their boxes and telling them when to stop. I think he would have been okay. Spencer has said, look, just nudge it back a little bit.
Well, you assume he has.
I would assume so. I don't think Ingram would have been able to tell where he was without that input.
But as I understand the rules, once you've come to a stop on the grid from your from the green flag lap, you cannot move the car unless instructed to do so by race controller or a marshal. I think they can do that in the grounds of safety. If there's a problem on the grid, they need to get a truck through, etc. There's always a get out of jail card for that kind of stuff. So Ingram reverses. Now, the grid hasn't fully formed at this point.
Very slightly as well. No start procedure has been had. No boards have been put up to say 5 seconds or...
But he stopped. And I think that's where the penalty then comes in, because you can't move once you've made... It's the same, I think, if you then crept forward a bit further as well, you'd also get a penalty. Once you've stopped... That is your mark.
So he was put under investigation straight away that would be then decided after the race as the same as Sutton in race two. Now, with the start, as I said, very equal, but that second phase, Ingram just seems to get that little bit of a jump, get alongside Dorlin, a little bit of shoulder to shoulder, going in down to the first complex, but Ingram comes out on top.
Yep.
Rowbottom then, for some reason, loses momentum coming out. Little bit
took
of
a really
slide.
Weird line, yeah.
And then Sutton and Camish managed to get by quite comfortably on the run out towards the back of the circuit. And then as they cut, all drivers come down into the final chicane, chaos ensues. And there are three different incidences here.
There are.
That we're going to talk about. First of all, from my opinion, it looks like Aaron Taylor-Smith has lost the back end very slightly coming into that final chicane. Gets the car very unsettled, has to hop across the inside of the chicane, which then causes a couple of other drivers to check up, one of those being Cook. He checks up, gets then tagged by Morgan.
And turned across the front of Morgan.
Turned across the front of Morgan, but then collects Aaron Taylor-Smith.
Yep, punting him.
Aaron Taylor-Smith ends up in the barrier.
Yep.
Cook has... quite serious damage on the left-hand side of the car. Not the side that he sits on.
Yep.
But continues off down the road while Taylor Smith is sitting in the barrier. Morgan at this point is facing the wall
with damage
for pit entry with a decent amount of damage. At that time, Doug Ward also got into the back of him, yeah. courtesy of the contact that had happened ahead. That was just unfortunate to be there.
Yeah. Then further behind that,
there seemed to be a coming together between, I believe, Smiley, Rainford and Patterson. Now, it looks as if Patterson's possibly missed his breaking point, or it's just the concertina-ing of drivers coming together. Pushes into the back of Smiley, who then clips Rainford out. Both of the drivers spin out to the left-hand side and then eventually recover themselves, going behind the bales at the chicane.
Whilst
Leon cuts the other part of the chicane, yes.
To me, obviously no penalties were given out for this, far as I've been able to see. No. It's just
first lap bunching,
isn't it? Yeah, it is, yes.
And it's just a bit unfortunate. Some drivers check up more than others. Some drivers go, right, I'm going for the gap and go for it sort of thing. One driver who I think probably made the most out of it was Proctor.
Yes.
Who, from 15th on the grid, then somehow appeared sort of like within the top six or seven. But as a result of all of those instances, the safety car was called one very quickly. Fair play. There was a car in the barrier. Didn't know whether they could retrieve it. As well as a car scattered to one side and two more off. But they all managed to recover themselves. But in the time that the safety car was called, there was an instance between Bensley and Selby down at the first complex. And it looks here as if Bensley's just got off the inside of Selby into the complex, misjudged it, sent Selby spinning.
Say that for
that's difficult,
fast.
Yeah. And therefore broken a rear toe link on Selby's car.
Yep.
He doesn't realise that at the time, has another little pirouette as well, trying to recover. And I believe Bensley thinks that he's got a puncture or something at the time.
Or that was something wrong with the car. Yes. Yeah, because it's corner to corner.
So he comes in at the end of that lap. Safe car is already out. Drivers in the pits.
But pretty much ready to go, because that incident that caused safety car to be scrambled is pretty much dealt with by the drivers, insofar as that Aaron Taylor Smith was able to get back under his own steam.
He was.
As was Morgan.
Yep.
Cook was able to carry on, as was Doble.
Yes.
And Rainford and Smiley. Both I don't know how Rainford's rear wasn't broken with that contact, but they were able to shortcut the chicane, or whatever you want to call it, circumvent the chicane and re-continue. So drives into the pits, yes, but nothing actually on track to deal with.
No.
Until the Bensley decided to...
Until Bensley came in, looked like he did a tyre swap, and then came back out of the pits on three wheels.
Mm.
An obvious failure of the front right suspension, had to stop on the exit of the pit lane, therefore had to be a full lift recovery, which meant that recovery vehicles had to come onto the track. So we got about four or five laps of safety car because of that. Probably didn't need it for the original stuff, but I'm glad that they threw it quickly rather than just
seeing
how it all went.
And I imagine as well that it would have given them a quick chance to assess the tyre barrier or the barrier that Taylor Smith has hit.
Agreed.
And they'd probably be able to go, yes, okay, it's fine, but you can't risk barrier damage, particularly as I believe that's the same barrier Mini vaulted earlier in the race as well, I believe.
Not quite. I think the Mini was further around, just past the start-finish straight. So, that was all the action for race three.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, there are a few other bits and pieces. Sutton, upon the restart, that classic tight line that he seems to be able to take through Church, manages to get the overtake on Dorlin. Camish then followed through over the start line on the following lap. At this stage, Cook's second-hand Toyota was having to be called in with the meatball flag because of the bodywork that started to gradually peel itself away from the
window
car.
Flapping, but potentially a door open. It was very difficult to see what exactly was wrong, but lots of things were wrong.
He did go back out for a lap, but the gaffer tape didn't hold, so he came back in and actually retired the car. Collard was then the next driver to...
Sorry, just on that point. Because one thing that annoyed me a little bit in commentary on this is that some people might be wondering, well, why bother going back out? It's clear you're running with a broken car. It's clear that, but the point is that for the manufacturers and for the independents, depending on what you're running, if you finish, and same with Jack Sears and independents, if you're in that, if you finish the race, you will get points because there's not 15 manufacturers in the lap. So if you finish, you will get manufacturer points for the team, or team points, or independent points, or Jack Sears points. That's why they were trying to get Morgan back out. It doesn't matter if you're a few laps down. If you finish the race and you're classified, you will still pick up, and you might finish 20th. You won't get any points in the Grand Championship, but if you're classified, you will pick up points in those other championships, which is why Plato Racing were trying to get Morgan back out, which is why Cook tried to come back out with damage to the car, because it still means you can score points.
Yes, agreed. Collard then had a rather slippery, slidey move.
Good move.
Again, same place as what Sutton did it on Dorling. This again was on Dorling. And judged pretty well. The lap before, he'd had a go and actually slid a bit wide. Managed to get a track limit violation for that. But the following lap, he managed to tee it up nicely, get down the inside, although he was on like full opposite lock coming past him.
Yeah, I think I'll give Dorling kudos as well. Good respect shown between the two drivers. Yeah. Gave Collard space. Could have tried to jump on that slide and get the place back. Would be a bit eager, as it were, and cause something at high speed. But no, I think it was well dealt with by both drivers.
Unfortunately, Dorling was then subject to Proctor coming past him as well. He just didn't seem to have as much race pace in this final race. He'd done really well all weekend, and I'm not saying this is a majorly bad race from him. This just, I think, shows with the other cars that there are, Napa's Virtue, that this is kind of where Restart probably sit.
It's a real shame, and I said this to you, that race three used to be a race where you, if you were an underdog or you weren't in the best teams, you might see...
Yep.
You had a good chance of a win or a podium. I'm thinking of Stephen Jelly. I'm thinking of Matt Simpson. Mm-hmm. I think Austin got a win for Reverse Grid, if I remember rightly. I don't remember the last time that happened where you went, that is a bit of a turn of the books. In my mind, like, I'm happy to be corrected, it might have been Gough at Silverstone, but that was such a...
Subject to weather conditions.
Exactly. did Doble win a Reverse Grid at SNET? I suppose you might argue...
Yeah, but he still had to fight it out and hold Saturn off.
Yeah, you might argue that was... an example.
Yeah.
But it feels to me that the whole point of what race three was originally brought in for isn't quite living up to that expectation now. And I don't know if that we need to look at reversing the grid more and saying the minimum number is say 10 to try and put these fast cars further back, or there's another way of looking at it. I'm not sure on that, because it's, in my mind, it's just not bringing what it used to bring.
Yeah, I think you have to take it with a slight pinch of salt this weekend, obviously only being one tyre compound. So I think one driver's understood the car a lot better because they were just running on one tyre.
Yeah, I agree.
The majority of the weekend. So any setup changes between races, they would be linear. When you get that change of tyres is when you can get a very shock result. If you've got someone that was running down near the back and they've got the softer tyre on for that final race, and they can make the progress.
But that's also a big problem, because if they haven't got the softer tyre and they've not
agreed,
got, then agreed. It's almost pointless. And it's like, I just think that the way the regs have gone, this isn't quite fit for purpose now.
Quite possibly. Moffitt's weekend didn't get any better. he retired on lap 15 with an unknown failure, just pulled off to the side of the road, and was quite eager, I would say, to get onto his jet to fly back up to Scotland, which was then unfortunately broken down as well.
Sounds like a Moffitt problem.
It does.
Is that the end of the note?
That is, mate.
Right, in that case, the classification for race three. Ingram kept the win despite a 5-second penalty, which was applied after the race for his reversing on the grid. Sutton and Camish made out the podium point playing positions, which meant Collard's run of a podium every event has not continued, finishing forfeit. A great, actually, recovery, because he had a pretty torrid time up to that point.
And what we think is going to be his last Touring Car weekend,
sounds that
this
way, unfortunately.
Season, especially from how you're speaking in interviews afterwards. And with the possible deals that have been signed in that Virtue team, he already said at the start of the season he thinks he only got a budget for half the season, and it looks to be that way as well.
Let's hope not, but yeah, I agree with you. Proctor finishing fifth, great result for him. And look, I'm going to say it again, it's ridiculous he's not on the grid. He did the same at Virtue last year when he stepped in at Thruxton.
The fact in,
it's nonsense.
He could just step into a car and be that much on the pace. He was up there with Camish and Sutton for most of the weekend, barring that incident that he had in race two.
I know it's a really harsh comparison because Selby's a newcomer, but in one weekend, he's already outscored Selby's number for the season. And it just baffles me.
And
that
he's pretty damn close to where Osborne is.
40 off points back, I think.
No, that was after race two.
Oh, that is true, actually. Yeah. I do also wonder if the championship was closer, whether Proctor would have been brought in, or potentially eyes to bring him in for a fight at the end of the season. Whereas I think that's not necessary, because I think Sutton can miss the next two weekends and not worry. Anyway, Dorling with a sixth, great weekend for Dorling. Gordon Shedden finishing seventh. Tom Chilton eighth. Patterson ninth. Good drive for Patterson. It hadn't quite happened for him up to this point yet. Yeah. But he managed to finish ahead of Mikey Doble in 10th. Then Daniel Rowbottom, De Leon, Smiley, Rainford, and Nick Hamilton getting the final points paying position.
just ahead of Gilbert.
Just ahead of Gilbert. And then, yeah, lots of DNFs for that race.
There were. Should we get straight into our awards then, though?
Yep, then we'll do tables and final thoughts.
And predictions.
Oh, yes.
So, my driver of the weekend, this is going to sound really boring, it's Sutton.
I deliberately went away so from Sutton.
Consistent. Yeah. And I'm not saying that it's getting to that stage where it's boring, because I still love to see him race. I love to see him put the moves on.
He makes it interesting. He does. Yeah.
But he's just so consistent. He's up there. I think he's had, what, a first, a second, and a first. No, a first and two seconds this weekend. And he's just keeps racking up those points.
And if you're Ingram, you must be thinking, what can I do? Like, what can I do?
An assassin. I think that might be the only option.
Let's not call for that. I just don't know what else to say. He's not mine just because I want to do something different.
Yep,
I've gone for Josh Cook on the basis that, look, it's been a bit of a difficult season for Toyota so far. Obviously, I'm not sure the teammate change would affect him too much, but it indicates that it's not smooth where he is, and the car has been a little bit of a letdown at times this season. Comes to his favourite circuit and
turns to his crown.
Yeah, but let's look at the facts. He took pole. He took the race to pole event. He then converted that in race one.
Yep.
Stayed on the podium for race two. And race three, he gets caught up a little bit in an instant. I don't think you can really apportion too much blame on him for that. It's a really good weekend for Cook, and it's put him into fourth in the championship. So, yeah, look, you can scream if you want to go for Sutton. I'm bored of going for Sutton. I think I've gone for Sutton every weekend so far. So I'm going Cook on that basis for a bit of difference.
Something that we do agree on, though, and that is the villain this weekend.
Pauling.
It is a really poor-performing BMW. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a weekend where they've been so low as a whole team for where they've scored points, and only just scoring points.
Yeah.
They don't seem to have had any pace in the car this weekend.
No, they've not been able to really recover anything either. We've seen in the past where you might have a poor Saturday and be able to recover it on the Sunday, or even a poor race one and two, but then click it on the Sunday. I do think having the same tyre compound would have made that harder, because the hard tyre nobody likes to run particularly, but you expect better.
Something we also alluded to in the preview as well, that there are very few traction zones at Thruxton, and it could hurt them. And it has this weekend, I think.
Yeah, but they didn't even get off the line well. I mean, the one thing that you bank on being really good, you didn't even see any of those sort of rocket ship starts. And then, you saw some fairly uncharacteristic mistakes from Rainford on the Saturday, which indicates to me pushing the car, potential frustrations with trying to get the car to where you want it to be. Yep. De Leon was probably the most smooth of the three. I mean, Gilbert, you can kind of put to one side as it's a baptism of fire coming to Thruxton. And actually,
finished all three races.
Yeah.
And that's what he was probably expecting or hoping to do for the weekend.
And by race three, he was closer to the pack. Race two, he was so far off the pace. But yeah, okay. Yeah, discount him because of what it was. Dillon was fine, but not anything spectacular. And
I think they'll be looking to bounce back at Knockhill. We know they go well
there.
I think at a minimum, they've got to win at least one of the races.
Would agree with you on that, yes.
You're surprised good for the weekend.
I've gone for Plato Racing. Obviously, they've had a bit of a difficult start to their touring car life. They've been involved in a fair few scrapes, and the car hasn't quite been where I think people expect it to be. But obviously a podium this weekend for Rowbottom, the first of them. And actually, Rowbottom had a really good weekend all round. Race three got away from a little bit, but I think that was a little bit of a war of attrition. And Morgan had a pretty solid weekend as well, to be fair. And obviously, race three fell away from him.
Yep.
But yeah, a return to form. They looked quick. I will say the car looked quite difficult to control at times, but it did at least look quick this weekend. And if they can use this as a bit of a springboard moving forward, maybe they can get the second half of the season a bit more where they want to be.
We highlighted this as a possible weekend where they could make the most of the things, being that nice slippery shape, as they've all been alluding to, and a slightly longer wheelbase than some vehicles. They certainly seem to have used it to their advantage. I don't know whether they would have been hoping for just that little bit more, because I think that's just how Plato is.
I do, but I also think to yourself, that is anybody actually who's not a Hyundai or a Napa? Okay, Cook. Yes, Cook this weekend, but Cook and Thruxton.
Yeah.
Is anybody actually winning that isn't Hyundai or... I mean, BMW occasionally as well, but BMW SR are much further along the road than... I think they'll be happy enough with this weekend. I think there's enough positive to take from this weekend.
I've gone for James Dorling.
Yeah, he came across my mind.
An outstanding weekend. One, as I've already said, quicker than Smiley in every single race, was up there fighting with the Hyundais and the Napa Fords and some of the lesser Audis at times, and just look fairly comfortable yep. this weekend to, what, three top 10 finishes?
Three top six, I think, in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah. Just done really well, and I wasn't really expecting him to do that well this weekend. I thought he would be the Jack Sears, which he did. But yeah, a really good performance.
No, completely agree. A really good drive for Doyle, and hopefully that can be a bit of a kickstarter for the second half of the season and maybe get that elusive podium.
Yeah, hopefully. Your surprise bad then, mate.
I've gone for Collard. Now, I know obviously race three, he did recover to fourth, but look, okay, let me explain it. Yeah, Saturday, you had him for pole. And okay, electrical gremlins, you can't necessarily control that, I agree. But then races one and two wasn't great, didn't really get back through the field particularly well. In a car we know is quick as well.
Both him and Chilton underperformed this weekend.
Well, there you go, and that's why it's my surprise bad. It's the underperforming. And okay, look, I accept the Saturday's out of your control. But we've seen in the past with both Ingram and Sutton, I know they're on a different level, but they are able to rebuild from a bad Saturday. Yeah. And actually, even some people like Proctor today in race three, and even Moffat, until it failed for him in race three, were able to get through the field in the way Collard just wasn't able to do in race one and two. And yes, he did very well in race three, got the fourth, good. But I would have expected better finishes this weekend as a package, which is why it's my surprise bag.
I've gone for Audi.
Oh, you're going to upset a few people on Facebook.
More specifically, Moffitt, yes, he's had some mechanical failures this weekend. You can't always account for that, but if it's the same issue that's come back over and over again, then there's something underlying there that they need to get sorted. But I think their overall pace this weekend was just a little bit off of where it normally is for me.
I don't necessarily disagree, but do you think that the surprise of how well they came to the first two rounds is slightly now being plateaued in where this is where they are as a season? And don't forget as well that the other teams would have probably, I'm not saying bought upgrades that you see in F1, but they'll be, like everyone else, they're working all the time to improve their package.
Well, they're even building another bloody car.
Well, they are at PMR, But I agree with you about the pace thing, but I would also say that's now been three rounds on the bounce, Netterton, Alton, Thruxton, where the pace has been a little bit off. Is this just the true level of where the car is? And we've been slightly deceived or over, whatever you want to call it, because of the great start they had to the season. I don't know. I agree with you that I was a little bit, reliability in particular this weekend. Yeah. Yes, I agree that is a disappointment from a team that have been so strong in reliability generally.
And Patterson got, that ninth in the final race, but a lot happened in that final race, and he made the most of it.
Doble finished well throughout the weekend.
But he wasn't going, oh, look, Doble's doing really well this weekend. It was just a bit like, they're just on the verge of the top 10, and that was it.
I don't think you can make the argument, as people have done, that it was purely the poor engine this weekend, because the Mercedes were really quick.
Yeah.
And
It wasn't exceedingly hot like the issues that they were having at Snetterton.
That was quick. And also who else is running the MV? The Laser Talks were quick enough. They weren't slow. Shedden had a couple of good finishes as well. Yeah. So
agreed.
I don't think it's all down to that. I do think though that we're just seeing what happens when you're running a new car and you get a really good
peaks
start.
And troughs.
It just starts to plateau out a little bit.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Predictions or tables?
It's up to you, mate. Let us know your awards in the comments down below as well, who you thought was the best, worst driver this weekend. Any surprises out there for you as well? And we'll update you with all the driver standings.
Yeah, I'm on that page, so we'll do that. So Ash Sutton continues to lead the way at the top, 284 to 225, which is Tom Ingram, of course. Camish still well ahead as well in third, 208 for him. It was a quietly good weekend from Camish, but it just wasn't enough to really challenge where he needs to be. Cook has had a good weekend and takes himself up into fourth on 152. Ricky Collard on 144. Charles Rainford, the big loser from the weekend, dropped down to 142 and sixth. Mikey Doble in seventh on 136. Darrell Leon on 124. Gordon Shedden on 116. And Daniel Rowbottom rounding out the top 10 on 109. Senna Proctor is on 31. Ahead of him is Sam Osborne on 42. He is ahead of Hamilton, Selby, Bensley, Buxton and Gilbert after one round.
Make I told you he got he closed up
what you will
quite a bit didn't
manufacturers we've now got a 150 odd point gap between 140 odd point gap between Alliance and Accelerate, so I think that's pretty much done. In terms of the teams, we've got nearly 170 odd point gap 150 again. 150 point gap, sorry, between Napa and Virtue. And the independents, this is where it's a little bit more interesting. Mikey Doble is top of that on 216 from Dowdley on 193. Rainford dropped down to 187, with Shedden only 5 points behind him now on 183. And then the independent teams, we've got LKQ Eurocar Parts with Powermax Racing on 250, ahead of WSR by 14 points, with Laser Tools back on 231. And then the Jack Sears, a great weekend for Dorlin. He's top of that by 2 points over Patterson. This is the great thing about the Jack Sears. While Dorlin had a great weekend with three first, it was 3 seconds for Patterson, so the gap is still there.
Those two, I think, are going to be the two drivers that are going to battle it out towards the end of the season. And I think those two will run away with it in the Jack Sears, as long as reliability sticks on their side. But yeah, they look like the Jack Sears drivers to beat.
Agreed. Right, let's rack up our predictions, then go into some final thoughts.
You've scored some points, man. I have.
It's been completely pointless in some ways, because I've not closed the gap, but I mean,
we've had a good weekend for predictions this weekend, I must say.
Across the pair of us, yes. So neither of us got the pole. I went for Camish, you went for De Leon. Neither of us got the sprint. I went for Camish, you went for Collard. You got two race winners in Sutton and Cook. Collard didn't perform and get you the third.
Not quite, no.
I had one race winner in Sutton, Camish and Chilton. No, didn't get me what I needed from there. And you were the Jack Sears. You went for Dorlin, I went for Patterson. Not a great deal in that, but it is a point for you none the same.
Yep.
Then I got a full house on the general predictions, which is nice. So I had none of the new drivers. That was Bensley and Gilbert.
So close.
Would score a point on the Sunday. And there'd be at least one non-finish between them. That happened just about. Hamilton doing me.
In that final race, one, you had Bensley go out early on, which you cheered. which, feel bad about, please.
No, I didn't cheer. I just grabbed your leg and went, where's Bensley? Where's Bensley? Where's Bensley? Where's Bensley?
and then Gilbert was running in the point.
He was
very late on in that race.
Nick Hamilton doing
that lack of speed that he's shown this weekend and possible lack of experience means that he finished just outside the points, but a decent weekend for him.
Cheers, Nick. I had 4+ cars to cut the chicane on the Sunday. We had that. So just for clarity, we had Ingram in race 2 after the contact with Cook. We had De Leon in race 3.
Yep.
Just fractionally before, we had Smiley and Rainford taking avoiding
action.
There's potentially another chicane cut in race 1 with Smiley. We haven't seen it, so we've not included it. But that is a point for me. Yeah. And then finally, Robot to outscore Morgan over the weekend by more than 8 points. I haven't actually bothered doing the
Morgan
maths.
Morgan had the non-finish in race 3 and Robot finished all 3 in the points. So,
and a podium.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've not bothered to work it out. It's happened. No.
And then for my ones, the one that I did get was a brand new winner this season. Obviously, Cook took that title. And then I missed out on Robot to make any moves at the complex. He just didn't.
It was too good.
He was so good. Far up the grid that he couldn't make any progress to make those moves. And I was just like, of all weekends, mate, you could have had a poor qualifying and then moved your way through. And then Ingram scored less than 43 points.
Which is his season average, which didn't happen either.
I thought he might have a bad weekend, but it wasn't. It was an okay weekend, but then still not as good as that.
Still a win.
Yeah.
Still a good win, but yeah, you're all right. So... final thoughts.
I need some after sun.
You do, yes.
we've got Knockhill in 2 weeks' time, which I'm really looking forward to.
Agreed.
In my opinion, I won't be rushing back to Thruxton.
No, live. I agree with you on that.
Quite happy to sit and watch it on the sofa.
I will say that it's for us, apart from the getting in and out, it was quite easy to get to. That part of it was fine. Yeah, I would like to go back maybe in 5-6 years' time when they've done some of the works.
Yeah.
But like you, I'm not rushing back.
No. We will be bringing you a ranking of all 10 circuits, because we have been to them all now for all their different events as well. So we will bring that out. I think we've got a decent break still to come in the calendar, and we'll bring that out then, and we'll explain our choices.
And the parameters, because you've been thinking of all parameters to
and bring you a lowdown in the top 10 positions.
Yes. I always enjoyed going to touring cars, and we should never forget the fact that we're very lucky we're able to go to these events and enjoy them. So that is, and the fan access to the drivers, the cars, etc. is still absolutely unmatched, and that is very important to note.
Possibly even better this weekend with them not being in garages.
Quite possibly so. I was a little bit disappointed with the racing on track, and I think that I've said in the past that Thruxton can be guilty of this.
Yep.
There's a lot of aero wash. There's a really good operating temperature window where it's great, and it's finding that seems to be very difficult. It's a once in a couple of seasons thing. A bit of rain would have probably helped as well, but we didn't get any of that.
No.
I think from the championship point of view, I think it's going to be very difficult to keep an interest in the championship for a lot of more casual fans this season, because without giving Sutton the title like we did this time last year, it's very hard to see how this changes now, isn't it?
It worked this time last year, though. Sutton's won the championship.
He wasn't so far ahead, though,
no,
was he?
No, he wasn't. I agree. Sutton looks to be fairly comfortably just picking up points every single weekend. That means that Ingram's not getting any closer and most of the time actually getting further away.
And the daft thing is, when you say picking up points, you're right, but those points are seconds and thirds. They're not even like sixths.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? It's not even like he's happy to, like, doing a Turkington and sitting in eighth and consolidating.
Yep.
He's still finishing. If Ingram wins, he's still finishing on the podium.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
Let us know your thoughts. Obviously, we're midway through the season now, and we'll be bringing you plenty of action throughout the remainder of the season as well.
One thing just to finish on, because we've got a little bit of time, is I think you made a very good point over the weekend, which is unusual, I know. So you said that you believe that they need to develop a more durable medium tyre or a better racing hard tyre, because that has been a problem, I think, this weekend.
I think you're out there, build a decent race tyre that can even build an extra hard if you need to, just to have that tyre offset at Thruxton, where you have to put someone on a slightly more difficult tyre to shake up a race a little bit more. Otherwise, we get what we get this weekend, which was race one and race two being very similar in their outcomes.
In the defence,
yes.
Just to pose the devil's advocate, they would argue potentially that whilst might not be the best racing tyre, they provide a tyre that's durable. We saw no punctures this weekend in the touring cars. We saw no tyre failures across the weekend in the touring cars. And we've had instances before at Thruxton where lots of punctures being picked up, which is very dangerous when you're going through Church at 150 odd mile an hour and the tyre blows. That's not good. So there is a middle ground, but I do agree with you. I think we've seen this with the hard tyre at other circuits. It's just not very good to race on.
No, agreed.
Right, we will not be going to Knockhill. We'll be going to a sofa, yet to be decided where. But we're very much looking forward to going north of the border. It's a fantastic circuit, and I'm a little bit jealous that we're not going this year, but have to try and organise getting back there soon.
Yeah, definitely. Leave us your thoughts down in the comments, and of course, make sure you're subscribed. Like down below.
There is one more thing I forgot to mention on the preview. We bumped into somebody on the Sunday. You keep talking
about Thomas, I believe.
Tom, I believe. I don't know if it's Thomas or Tom.
Came up to us. He's at university at the moment doing a media-based degree.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, he's doing some research. He's really into his racing, spoke really passionately to us at the weekend when he caught up with us. And he's looking for your input as a fan.
Yep, it's to do a survey for around 10 minutes, which is looking into, and I quote, National Motorsport Academy fan attitudes towards potential changes in touring car shapes and fuels. We will drop a link to this questionnaire on the Thruxton Review thumbnail thing that comes out onto Facebook and Instagram. So if you have got time to support one of the fans in their research, that'd be great. We're certainly going to be filling out the questionnaire. So yeah, sorry we didn't mention that in the preview, Thomas, but we
nearly missed it in this one.
But we didn't because we're professionals.
So yeah, until next time, we'll be back with a preview for Knockhill. But until then, stay safe
and see you soon.